now for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ayres.
Welcome to our News for Utah Plus app. You're finding us here because you love watching streaming TV. Maybe you don't watch local news anymore, although I would invite you to watch ABC4 because we got a lot of good programming there. But this is our local political show where we bring in analysts. We talk about topics that are affecting us here in Utah and across the nation. So we are so glad you're here. Tell your friends, won't you? I'm Lindsay Ayres, joined by Leah Murray, of course, of the, the Walker Institute of Politics, because there's three of them, and Taylor Morgan with Morgan & May Public Affairs. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
It's good to be with you. Introduce yourselves a little more so people know who you are.
Taylor Morgan, partner at Morgan & May Public Affairs, a local consulting, lobbying, political marketing firm.
And one of our adjunct faculty at Weber State University, where I am a professor of political science.
The Dr. Leah Murray.
I am so nervous.
Okay. Are you going to make the students call you Professor Morgan?
No.
Wait. For the people who are just tuning in, Taylor is teaching a class at Weber State University on...
We are going to focus on political campaigns and lobbying.
Okay.
And I'm very, very excited, also incredibly nervous, because no one has ever thought before that it would be a good idea to put me in charge of teaching college students.
I should be nervous too.
Yeah, you probably should.
My big idea.
You probably should, yeah. But I'm very excited.
When does class start?
Next week.
Yeah.
Okay, and our intern Marina, shout out to Marina, is taking Taylor's class, so we're going to get a full report. An actual report on how Taylor is as a teacher.
Be kind, Marina. Thank you.
Be honest.
I'm going to come audit your class. Can I come audit? Because
nope.
I'd like to learn a little more about lobbying.
You would have to hustle because everything you just said, not only do you do this show, right, Lindsay, but you also do the 4 p.m. news. And I don't know, traffic, you could get up there because it's Tuesday night.
To Weber State. Yeah, that would be tough. But my intern's doing it, so I think we could carpool.
There you go.
You have to drive fast.
I'm just saying. I'm going to come audit your class. All right. We've got a handful of topics to hit today. President Trump has been threatening vote by mail, which impacts us directly here in Utah. We love vote by mail here in Utah. We've got a lot of clues about what's coming up on a special session that have become public, some not public that I learned about that we will share. Also want to acknowledge just right off the top the tragedy that we experienced here in Utah over the past weekend, and that is we had two officers from the Tremont and Garland Police Department killed in line of duty. Leah, Taylor, when stuff like this happens here in Utah, what's your first thought when you hear these things happen?
Go ahead, Leah.
Yeah, I was just going to say my first thought is someone who cares very much about public service, you know, that these are public servants and all across these, disciplines, police officers, teachers, the military, are people who just, without a lot of pay, are making this country possible. And then when something horrible like this happens and they're making the ultimate sacrifice, I just wish everyone would pause and just be a little kinder to public servants in the space that they are working.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, well said, really. Utah has a special way about coming together as a community, cities, and our state as a whole when a tragedy like this happens. And I hope that translates into continued support, not just momentary support and awareness, but lasting support for example, law enforcement officers. You know, these officers are not paid enough for what they do and the risks they take. And, you know, I hope that we step up to take care of their families and others who serve.
Yeah, and I think right there, your point, it feels so celebratory is the wrong word. Does that make sense? But it's momentary. And then we kind of go on and then we're just mean to police officers.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and it's like, no. What we should, these should be the moments where we remember these people and their families, because it's not just these public servants who made the ultimate sacrifice, but their families have as well. Those families will never be the same again.
Yeah.
And we should not forget that. Right.
And I like, too, the saying, in times of tragedy, look for the helpers, right? You see the community come together. You see neighbors coming out, just lining the streets with ribbons.
Yeah, that was incredible.
This is the time when Utah shows up, and it really is what makes our state great.
Yes.
So
yep.
Politics aside, we are united. We tend to forget that sometimes. So let's dive into the controversial issues, shall we?
Let's get divisive.
Let's talk about one of the biggest things to hit Utah politics in a little while, and this is sort of an issue involving our Senate Senate President Stuart Adams. And President Adams, it was reported this week by the Salt Lake Tribune that he helped influence a law that later benefited his step-grandchild. She had been accused of having, she was 18 years old, accused of having sex with a minor who was 13 years old. She was facing a really stiff sentence. And then it turns out President Stuart Adams influenced a law by going to his Senate Majority Leader, Kirk Cullimore, and saying, hey, I don't think 17 or 18-year-olds who are still in high school should be charged as an adult. They are still in high school. They could be considered a minor. Utah changed that policy, put it into a bigger omnibus criminal justice bill. We changed that law. Now the reporting comes out, and the appearance is that President Stuart Adams used his influence and power to help get his granddaughter a leaner sentence. She got a lesser sentence than she was originally facing. However, this bill was not retroactive, but it did impact the criminal case, and the defense attorneys actually helped draft the language. So, guys, initial thoughts on this. We haven't really talked about this on this show, so go ahead and just kind of lay it out from the beginning in terms of what President Adams should have done in this situation and how you think this plays out.
So I just wanted to say one of the issues here is it's not enough to be right or to do the right thing, I think, when you're a public servant or, I would argue, an elected official. You have to actually also appear right. So one of the issues of this case, because what I hear President Adams saying is that's not what happened.
Right.
Right. That's not what I was doing.
I didn't do anything wrong. The law's not retroactive.
Right. But a little bit, it looks cringy. I don't know if the right word for that is. Yeah. And so my question is, that becomes a problem in and of itself. Even if what you did was by the books fine, the way it looks, you know, I think can cause some real issues.
And Taylor, do lawmakers have to think through things like that? Because to Leah's point, you could make the argument like, well, I know in my heart I'm not influencing this case, or I'm not trying to get her a leaner sentence, but I do think this policy should change. I mean, but the reality of politics is sometimes optics are the politics.
Optics, perception is reality. Certainly in this situation, the optics are not great. However, I will defend President Stuart Adams in this case. I was aware of this conversation during the legislative session, and legislators were referencing numerous other examples of minors engaging in these kind of activities with their peers in a high school setting. So it wasn't just one situation personally connected to President Adams that benefited potentially from this change in statute. Again, it was not retroactive, right? So it didn't directly undo
the prosecutors and the defense attorney,
the appearance
judge
and the
acknowledged
influence.
It. Yeah.
Sure, all of that is problematic. However, it is a broader issue. I think it's a really complicated issue. It's not something I'm an expert on. And it is really, really obvious that we need to be protecting children and protecting minors, even in a high school setting. So there's issues. I'm not saying there aren't. However, there is a lot more to the story. And right now, opponents of President Adams are politicizing this for political gain. And we'll see what happens. I do not see him stepping down over this. I really don't think his own constituents or his delegates are calling for him to resign. Rather, these are other voices.
Can I ask a question? And just because it's not just about stepping down from his constituents. Another layer of his constituency would be senators in the Utah State Senate.
His caucus, who have elected him to be Senate president.
Right, so he's the Senate president, he's the leader, and even if he's done nothing wrong, now what we're talking about is not whatever was on our agenda, right, for the special session or what we wanted to work on. What we're talking about is this, and I do wonder, you know, are there calls inside of the caucus, and I don't know that I would know or you or any of us would know, to be like, this is making noise we just don't have time for right now, and please, how about you retire into just being a senator? Not just, I mean, that's a very important job.
I can say conversations have and are happening. I can say it's possible something may be done in a special session. But I will say that there is firm support in the Senate Republican caucus for President Adams' leadership, for him to remain a Senate president as of right now.
So that point that there could be something in a special session, meaning lawmakers could potentially repeal this provision in this omnibus criminal justice bill that said that 18-year-olds who are still enrolled in high school and have sex with a 13-year-old. I mean, this is a very, I've heard it called a Cinderella slipper type of law, where it fits very one single scenario. It fits only one foot, and that is the foot of the granddaughter of Stuart Adams. But so they repeal that provision, as you're saying, what is possible in the special session?
And yeah, and I'm just going to push right here and then you can answer.
Please,
I'm so sorry. But like, that's the rub. When the conversation is about an active, independent legislature, because we don't really trust the judiciary and we don't trust bureaucrats to make decisions, now they are legislating, how did you say it? To the Cinderella slipper. Right? So really probably what you want are judges and juries to be making decisions with jurisprudence on those Cinderella shoes. A little bit, that's the slippery slope, right? When you ask the legislature to start making decisions on everything, these are the problems that you create.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Lindsay.
No, I want to change the direction a little bit. Yeah. So make your point, and then I will do that.
Well, my point is that we should both be very concerned, and we should celebrate what is happening with this situation. On one hand, we should be happy and we should acknowledge that our legislators are citizen legislators. They're part-time legislators. They have other day jobs. They're real people. Mm-hmm. They live in the real world. And
I think they're good people.
And good people.
Right. I think they actually are trying to make the world a better place, generally.
And usually the way they try to do that in the way issues come to their attention is because of personal connections, family connections, neighbors, relationships close to them. That is how they become aware of issues that require a statutory change. That's not a bad thing. I think that's a good thing.
That is the point I wanted to get to, Taylor, is what should President Adams have done in this situation? You were part of these conversations back in 2024 when, you know,
I was aware. I wasn't directly part of them.
You weren't having the conversations, but you were aware of the case,
Not of the case, just of the conversations in general. I was aware of this statutory change being discussed in the context of applying to many other situations, not this one.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, we all work in politics, you know. I've heard a Democrat say, okay, Adam should have been transparent about this. Do we expect him to have come out and been like, listen, my granddaughter's facing a rape charge. I want to change this law, but it's not impacting that. Like, the public would have never gone for that. So, like, what should have President Adams done in this situation to avoid the appearance that he used his power to benefit a family member?
Well, to be clear, another senator sponsored, right?
After he asked him to.
Correct. So I think that was his... Again, giving him the benefit of the doubt.
Trying to put some distance.
I believe that was him trying to put some distance, putting it to another senator, and then allowing the process to play out. I wanting to give him the benefit of the doubt, knowing that he's a good man, a good person, and tries to be a good Senate president. Again, I may have a bias.
I'm a Republican lobbyist, what you're saying.
That is the process, and I believe him handing that off to another senator was his attempt to stay out of it.
Right, and a little bit, that is always the process. But the answer is this is when it's a problem.
It can create this
kind of issue. And I don't know, maybe the answer is you can't. Maybe he couldn't have done it any other way. Because the fact is...
Should he have waited another year?
He's president of the Utah State Senate. Any statutory change is going to pass by him as leader, right?
And he's human and has human family.
Yeah.
And therefore has sometimes accidental vested interest. Not a vested interest, but, you know, things coming up, he'd be like, I understand this from a different point of view.
Yeah. But I will say, I want to note, I think it's really important and it's a really good thing for the process that there are concerns and questions being voiced right now, that there are protests, right? We have seen calls for resignation coming not just from the left, but also from the far, far right, with Jason Preston and his group rallying at the Capitol last week. So I think it's a really healthy, a really positive thing that Utahns across the political spectrum are raising concerns about this, because we should be willing to take a hard look at the process and conflicts of interest.
We'll have to see how it all shakes out and whether it impacts him further and just the public perception of trust as, you know, we watch the legislative process play out. All right, I want to switch to another topic now. President Trump is threatening a vote by mail. He posted on X, Truth Social, wherever he posts these days, that he wants vote by mail to go away. He wants Republicans to lead that charge. He says he's working on an executive order to achieve that end. I'm not sure how an executive order does that, but that's another conversation for another day.
He can try.
Yeah.
Can try.
Utah's Lieutenant Governor, Deidre Henderson, came out and basically said she believes it's the state's constitutional right to be able to decide the time, place, and manner of elections and how they are conducted in the states. What plays out here, Leah? What do you think this looks like?
Well, a little bit. I don't understand President Trump, so maybe you can defend him. But here
what?
We go.
He won
the election. What are we talking about?
Yeah.
So this man is like a sore loser and a sore winner. Like at some point.
You stole my point.
Like at some point, the election, if it results in your election and then you are now still saying it's crooked, I mean, a little bit, right? I don't understand what he's talking about. The thing that bothers me with vote by mail is the state of Utah has been doing this since 2014, 2013. Mm-hmm. I was at early workshops in municipal elections where they were talking about should we be running vote by mail. The reason why we did it is because fiscally it's responsible. We do not have enough money to be replacing or repairing the machines we were using that the Help Americans Vote Act required us to use back in 2002. So the right move is it's a lot cheaper to mail than to buy these new machines every election cycle. So it was all very, how do I say, Republican, fiscally conservative, being efficient, doing all the right things. And now we've got a Republican national leader bashing something that Utah created, let out on, and I'm just exhausted.
And Republican here in Utah, not just in theory, but also in reality, voting by mail in Utah was led by Chairman Thomas Wright, who was chair of the Republican Party then. Mm-hmm. This was an effort that was pushed and led by the Utah State Republican Party to increase turnout among Republicans in Utah.
Right.
And guess what? It has worked. Mm-hmm. It
and
has
by the
worked
way,
incredibly well.
Yeah, and to that point, President Trump, I also think, is not aware of his voting base and the Republican voting base, which seems to be evolving toward needing easier ways of voting for Donald Trump and Republicans to win. So it's like old conventional wisdom from the 1980s about who votes if voter turnout is, when voter turnout works, who votes? And the answer is Republicans now vote as a result of vote by mail.
It's always risky to try to get into Donald Trump's head, right? Let's just want to, with that disclaimer, I don't think Donald Trump is really serious about this. I think this is window dressing, right? This is a political move. Donald Trump knows, President Trump knows that he lost in 2020, because he opposed vote by mail publicly.
His by the base, way, lost Georgia Senate as well in that same election cycle.
That cost him the election. He won, right? He won the last election because he supported vote by mail and because his voters participated
and they
by
need
mail.
It.
Why
Absolutely.
Now? Why is he coming out now and saying this is a problem?
Again, he promised he would do something about it. He is trying to check that box, but he knows that he's doing it in a way by executive order that will not have an impact. This will not hold up, as our lieutenant governor rightly pointed out. And I'm very grateful that she took such a strong position against President Trump on this. It is the state's constitutional right to determine the manner in which they hold elections.
And I looked at the language of the Constitution because everyone decides to post it when we talk about stuff like that. And it literally says that only Congress, you know, can make the decision to impact the way states choose their.
Right.
And so even if he was going to do an executive order, it's only Congress who can do that via
it's
the Constitution.
Not him, but also Congress can only make a decision on federal elections.
Right.
Correct.
Right.
They cannot
talk about gubernatorial elections or state legislative elections, just Congress and the presidency.
Yeah.
I want to bring in producer Peter here. Producer Peter, hi, first of all. Sorry,
hi,
it's been a minute since I got to you, but you're itching over there. It looks like you have something to say.
Oh, no. Well, first of all, I was about to flash you up your lovely time card.
Oh, my time card.
We're down to 5 minutes.
We're talking too much. We have so much to say.
Oh, no. Well, I think if I were to give kind of what's bouncing around in my head on this, I think you can see it in the scheme of, like you said, it's something Trump said he would get to when he gets back in office. Sort of all these things that he feels in some way jilted by when running into the 2020 election. But I'm also curious if this is still kind of a stress test for some executive order stuff. You've seen a lot of his executive orders that have been more ambitious, the birthright citizen stuff, the Department of Education stuff. All the way up to the Supreme Court on some expedited review. And so far, the general rule has been that they allow some of these orders to go into effect while the litigation plays out through federal appellate. which you would think if the Supreme Court was so opposed to allowing the president to act in this way, they might allow certain injunctions to stand. I'm curious to see, since there's such an immediate impact to midterm elections, which the court has traditionally been very proactive about protecting elections, especially in such close proximity. If they take a harder line, if he does come out with an order affecting state level voting
procedures. Yeah, but that stress test of the executive order is a good point. Yeah.
If I'm Speaker Mike Johnson, I'm really, really concerned about this.
Absolutely.
Because I'm going to lose my very slim majority in the House if Republicans aren't able to vote by mail.
Well, that's the point. Like, this is such old conventional wisdom about how making voting easier somehow only benefits Democrats, which I don't think has been true. It's not true in Utah and hasn't been true nationally.
But we have so few Democrats in Utah, we don't really have a good sample size.
But even in places like Texas and Florida, I don't think it's still true. Okay. Georgia, as an example.
All right, last 5 minutes. We're going to get to...
I think down to 3 minutes now.
Okay,
right,
well, we talked too long.
I'm revising the time card right now.
There is likely to be a special session of the Utah legislature next month. Now, I did some reporting this week. House members received an email telling them to save the date, essentially, for September 15th. Now, that date has not been confirmed nor announced by the governor, and his office has told me that he has not landed on a date yet. However,
it is September 15th. That was announced by legislators in interim committee meetings last week. That is the date, September 15th. I think it's public record now.
Yeah. Okay. So politicians have to say to me, we haven't picked a date. We haven't made the official call, but everyone behind the scenes knows that it's going to be September 15th.
I'll send you some publicly available Zoom video footage. Okay?
Right.
They pick a date while Lindsay and I are on vacation. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. They just pick a date when we can't be there. So, okay. So we're going to do a speed round of what we think is going to be on the special session agenda, because when the governor calls this thing, he gets to set the agenda. He gets to pick. So the way this goes down is right now the legislature is pitching him and pitching him hard, and the lobbyists are pitching him hard on what should go on the special session. I didn't say you're doing anything wrong. I just said that's the process. Okay, so using the sounder from draft picks of fantasy football, producer Peter.
Football season is underway.
Football season is upon
us. NFL preseason is upon us. The first college football game is this Saturday.
Right.
So this seemed appropriate.
This is appropriate. So my first pick for what's going to be on the special session is a bill to allow the governor to require the appointment of the Chief Justice of the state Supreme Court. That will require advice and consent from the Senate. However, the issue with the governor when he vetoed this bill back in the session was, I don't want to do this every 4 years. The new bill allows it to be a reappointment every 8 years, and justices can't serve more than one term as the Chief Justice. That is the bill. That is my pick for what makes it on the special session.
Okay.
Taylor,
get ready.
What's your pick? Your pick?
All right. With my pick.
Don't do that.
I would like to pick that Phil Lyman will hold a press conference on the South Capitol steps, which fewer than 30 people will attend.
About what?
Doesn't matter.
He'll just hold a press conference.
He'll hold a press conference. Nobody will be there.
That's not a pick for what goes on the session.
Okay, fine. All right. Can I get the sound again? Okay. Okay, with my real pick for the special session, the legislature will tweak election laws in Utah. I can't say a whole lot about this, but they will make some important technical changes to election code because they can only do that now in a special session in order for those changes to take effect before the 2026 primary cycle, which begins in January.
That's a good point. Okay, so one of those bills I know will be tweaks to some unintended consequences for a bill that allows local governments to access some sensitive election materials, but I don't think that's what you're talking about,
Taylor. There may be more than that. I can't say anything else. Don't push me.
That is his pick, the vague and eye-rolly pick of what will be on the
special. Specific election fixes.
Okay.
That's a good pick.
All right, that is a good pick. All right, Leah.
Go, producer Peter. So, I feel like I want both a quarterback and a tight end, so I'm going to do two Joy's is.
That's not how it works. This is round one.
You did two.
Okay,
should we do round two?
You didn't set it up as a football frame. But one wasn't a real pick.
It was like Baker Mayfield.
I think it's possible we see the legislature getting President Stuart Adams out of the pickle, the optics pickle we talked about earlier. Yeah. But I also think maybe we see the legislature getting themselves out of the initiative about House Bill 267. Mm. Right? So maybe they're going to say, we don't really want that going to the ballot, so we will repeal that you can't organize if you're a public servant. Or they're going to say, they repeal this little thing that we talked about earlier to protect President Adams.
Yeah, I like it.
Those are really good picks. However, I will say on HB 267, the anti-collective bargaining ban, they don't need to act on that immediately, right? So typically what goes on a special session agenda is something that can't wait until 2026 and the general session. Technically, they could wait until January of 2026 in the general session, still repeal that, still impact the ballot for November of 26. So that's my only pushback on will that actually make it on.
I was thinking in the conversation that I've been reading, which is basically the union organizer saying, we are not negotiating with them.
Right.
And I think our friend Taylor has history with this, where you kind of negotiate an initiative you have, and then a bill gets passed or the compromise isn't as nice to the initiative seeking.
Yeah.
So I just kind of wondered if there was heat.
Mm. Well,
they might not have to, but I thought that might be bubbling.
I don't think Leah is off base here, because I will say, I don't know that the legislature feels the need to negotiate on this anymore.
They just, repeal and do it some other way?
I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that.
I think they might not want to have the conversation.
Well, I don't think the unions are really wanting to have the conversation, and I think that the legislature is mad at the unions, and so they're just going to do whatever they're going to do.
Can I get one last draft pick? Maybe?
Go, Peter, quick, hurry, hurry.
No.
No, hold on.
Come on. I need the sound. I can't do it without the sound.
I know. We caught him off guard.
Okay, here we are. Democratic and progressive groups in Utah send out excessively lengthy emails for fundraising lamenting legislative abuse of power. Done.
So what is that on the special session?
They will. They'll try to raise money on it. Period.
Oh, based on whatever they talk about in the session.
That's right.
Gotcha. I see. You're saying it's going to be a fundraising
effort. You're not drafting the line judges.
You're not picking agenda items.
What are you talking about?
Draft picks are what goes on the agenda. Follow the rules, Taylor.
Yeah. I make my own rules. Come on.
All right. I guess we have to wrap there, Producer Peter, unless you want me to have more time.
No, you don't get any more time.
I will say that there are at least 11 items being considered per my reporting, because we know that that email that went out to House members listed a whole bunch of items. There were at least 11 on there.
Mm. My picks are like fantasy players, not real agenda items.
Yeah.
But a lot more fun.
I don't know what you're picking out there.
That's not how this works.
Okay.
But I like where your head's at. It's good. So abc4.com is where you can see what all we think will be, what all we suspect will be on the special session agenda. But of course, we'll wait for the governor to make that official call and see which lobbyists get to him first. If Taylor's election bills get on there, you'll know he got to him first.
I don't know.
And can we do a who was right?
We'll have to circle back.
We circle back.
Yeah. Check back with us maybe in a few weeks.
What do the kids
weeks.
Call that? The receipts?
Keep the receipts. Yeah. We need the receipts. Yeah. Okay, so we'll play this clip back, and then we'll see what actually makes it on the call, and we'll see who was right there. So, okay, perfect, you guys. Watch us on ABC4 as well. Inside Utah Politics airs Sundays at 8 and 4. And tell your friends about us again, because we love more people. And follow us on Instagram.
And Lindsay's the best.
Well. You know, she said it, not me. Thank you for being with us. We will see you next time.